Want to pull off the season's freshest trends? You just need the right shoes. That's where Designer Shoe Warehouse comes in. Loving wide-leg jeans? Pair them with sleek, low-profile sneakers. Obsessed with the sheer trend? Try it with mesh flats. Feeling boho? Comfy sandals nail the whole free-spirited thing. Find on-trend shoes from the brands you love, like Birkenstock, Nike, Adidas, and more at DSW.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy. No matter why your clients give, their donations can do so much more. With a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360, they can donate cash, publicly traded securities, or other non-cash assets like real estate and even crypto, while recommending grants at any time. DAF Giving 360 can offer you over 25 years of expertise, bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
Is an Odyssey original.
This is Coronavirus Daily. I'm Charles Feldman.
And I'm Mike Simpson from the KNX Odyssey Studios in Los Angeles. Kids going to summer camps with other kids. If they're over 12, they're vaccinated maybe. If they're under 12, none of them are. So with the Delta variant out there, what's the risk in camp?
Working moms have had it rough during the pandemic. We will look into how rough.
Summer Olympics just weeks away. Tokyo declaring an emergency over a rise in COVID cases.
Let's start with kids, summer camp, and the Delta variant. Dr. Donna Hollis is director of the Nurse Practitioner Pediatrics Program at the NYU Myers College of Nursing. Doctor, how concerned should parents be?
So I think one of the first things parents have to think about, and anyone who lives in the household or comes in contact with children who are under the age of 12, so up to 11 years and 11 months and 30 days, when are they all vaccinated? Are the parents, are the anyone who comes in contact, are all of the people at a day camp or at a camp they're going a sleepaway, or if they're doing school activities, are they all vaccinated? Is everybody? That's like one way to create a cocoon and help those children. The other thing is that the children, depending on the activities, they could wear masks still. So if they're indoor activities, they should have masks on. If they're outdoor, they probably don't need masks, just like the usual.
So it sounds like when you're considering sending the child away to camp, it's a lot of kind of let your fingers do the walking. You got to ask questions. You got to figure out what their protocols are. Are they doing masks still? Is most of the stuff outside? What are the different age groups? Because if everybody's older, well, maybe that solves that problem if everybody's vaccinated. But then you don't always know if everybody's vaccinated.
That's really true, because once they said, you know, people who are fully vaccinated don't have to wear masks, it seemed that so many people took them off, whether they were or not. So you do need to be diligent and ask the question. And if somebody's not vaccinated and you've been, be a champion and say, you know what, I took the vaccine, you know, whatever happened, if they had a sore arm, you know, it was good, I'm fine. You know, that's what people have to support other people who are hesitant to take the vaccine, because that's the only way communities are going to really be protecting themselves now.
I mean, even though, you know, kids obviously need some, you know, venue, some outlet in order to just get away from their parents and be amongst other kids, are we, though, still at a too precarious state with this pandemic to send your kids off to camp?
So that's a really good question that I don't know anyone has the exact answer to. We do know the Delta variants are very powerful, and there's currently protection for those who have had the vaccine. So if a parent goes off to work or does something and they happen to come in contact, their body should be able to fight it off so they're not bringing it home to their children. But the parents, it's going to be parental decisions. And I think asking those critical questions, you know, who's vaccinated and who's not? I believe that you have to make the decision. If you want your children be exposed to someone who's not vaccinated, that's a problem when the vaccine is readily available to anyone who's 12 and over.
Dr. Donna Hollis directs the Nurse Practitioner Pediatrics Program, the NYU Myers College of Nursing. Doctor, thanks.
Studies have shown how the pandemic has impacted working moms. Many had to do double duty during the day by getting their own work done and then taking care of their kids at the same time.
Some even had to quit their jobs, stay home with the kids. Now they're falling behind in the recovery, the economic recovery. Misty Hagenis, senior advisor and research economist at the U.S. Census Bureau, and Christine Beckman, professor of public policy innovation, USC Price School of Public Policy. Misty, what kind of hit did working moms take, and how bad is it now trying to get back in?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. Working moms, along with a lot of others, really struggled at the beginning of the pandemic when everything shut down. They had a decrease of about 21 percentage points in active participation in work. That's improved, just as it has for everybody else. But you can see in the data that when we come up towards last fall, the beginning of the school year, and now as we're entering summer, that moms are starting to lag behind again. And so as issues, especially for school-age children, flux through changes in school environments, it's been really a struggle for a lot of mothers to, maintain work and balance that with juggling childcare needs.
Christine, is this something that is likely to be rectified once more children return, hopefully, to classrooms, freeing their moms to go back to the workforce? Or is there something about this that's different and is likely to have a lasting effect, regardless of if the kids are back in school?
Well, it's certainly, thanks for having me, it's certainly going to help. I think I've talked to working moms who are thrilled to be vaccinated, but what they really want are the schools to open, right? What they really want is their kids to be able to be out of the house and to be able to be able to work again. So it will help. It's going to take a while. I mean, it was quite a hit, and it's not, finding a new job, rebuilding the infrastructure that people had to, schools are opening, but then you have the childcare, the extended family, all of what we call, in our work, the scaffolding of childcare that sort of enables people to work because they have their children being cared for. That isn't just going to immediately come back, right? We'll get the schools, that will help tremendously, but rebuilding takes time. And, I think frankly, families are exhausted from trying to make it to this point. And sort of the energy it takes to rebuild all of that, I think it doesn't mean it's going to come back in an instant when schools reopen.
So Misty hit hard, took on a lot of responsibility, sometimes left the workforce altogether, now lagging in the rehiring. If that's continues, do we end up, because businesses are going to try and do this hiring surge, right? And some already are. If they don't get the candidates, did the whole bunch of men end up getting jobs and then women are out of it again, even in a few months' time, because those jobs have been taken when they couldn't apply for them because the kids were still in school and all these other factors?
Yeah, so I mean, I think it's a little bit more complex in today's society than perhaps if we were to see this pandemic happen, 50, 40 years ago. Women really today are breadwinners. They might not be the lead breadwinner in the household. It's only about one in four households where the woman has the primary earnings for the household in dual earner couples. But women are essential and critical breadwinners within households these days. A lot of our middle class cannot survive off of one income. So, I I think that as we move forward, you know, I think what's happening right now is moms are just really exhausted, because even though women have made a lot of advancements in terms of working out in the formal labor market, there hasn't been as much advancement in terms of, you know, domestic chores and unpaid labor in the household. So, you know, moms are just exhausted. You know, and one of the reasons why they're so exhausted is because a lot of them are working through the dual duty of childcare. So I think as we move forward, you know, it's been a stressful time for mothers. It's been a stressful time for parents and for everybody. But, you know, I do think there are some potential silver linings here. I think a lot of the flexibility that's been happening around remote work and telework potentially means that more women will actually enter the labor market. You know, we've been pretty stalled in terms of labor force participation for women for the past couple of decades. So I think it'll be interesting to see what happens as we move forward, how the adjustments that employers make in terms of the demands they have on how their employees do work will really impact female labor force participation.
Christine, I'm curious, you know, there was a time not that long ago when if you had two, you know, job applicants, a potential employer, if one was male, one was a female, might choose the male because their excuse would have been something along the lines of, oh, but if we hire the woman, she's going to have kids and it's going to interrupt her career trajectory, so we'll go with the guy. And I'm wondering if because of the pandemic, when women had the unfair burden in many ways of being the ones to have to be at home and take care of the kids, if employers, some employers are going to go back to that old stereotype.
It's an interesting question. I mean, I think as Misty sort of pointed out, the fact is incomes are really relying on two incomes, and that, and so that if that happens, it's certainly going to have a really devastating effect. I guess I've been amazed, frankly, that throughout the pandemic, that the burden sort of remained so solely on women's shoulders, and that the pandemic would have been the moment where, you know, two things should have happened in my view. One is we should have recognized that it really was, it was not sort of unfair. It was, you know, completely unfair for women to sort of bear that burden of working full time and caring for children. And the norms didn't shift as much, right? We really didn't see in the numbers women getting supported by their partners. And that is going to continue this problem, right? And the other thing I'm really surprised by, or actually hopeful by, is that this, the gender roles aren't changing, but maybe we can get better support outside of the home, right? Because these were left completely on family shoulders as child care centers closed. You know, those that can afford very expensive child care, you know, very, very few people have access to family leave. So there's a lot of public policies that would support families so that women weren't disadvantaged because there was an infrastructure that would support them if, you know, whether we're in a pandemic or not, so that they can sort of be out there in the workforce. And then those employers wouldn't need to discriminate because we'd have an infrastructure that supported all parents.
What do you think it is? I mean, do people just not think how much time it really actually takes to do all this stuff, to like hang on and make sure the whole house doesn't fall apart and take care of the kids and then also do your job? It's hours and hours and hours a day.
And it's really easy to see the physical work, right? Who's doing the laundry? Who's doing the dishes? Right? Who's making dinner? But there's all the other invisible work that is really even hard for couples to articulate and talk about, right? The mental work of the list making and making the doctor's appointments, knowing what needs to, you know, knowing the schedules and coordinating all that. And so I think there's even when some of the more physical work is being shared more easily, the time it takes for that mental work and that coordinating work really, it does add up, and it's hard for people to see it and therefore share it.
Right. Okay. Christine Beckman, Professor of Public Policy Innovation, USC, and Misty Hagenis, Senior Advisor, Research Economist at the U.S. Census Bureau. Thanks to you both.
Coming up after this short break, COVID goes for gold in Tokyo. Tokyo is getting ready for the Summer Olympics. Remember, the games were supposed to be last year, but they were delayed due to the pandemic.
So now there's a state of emergency over another wave of infections. So does this spoil the Olympics for everybody? Sheila Smith, Senior Fellow for Asia-Pacific Studies on the Council on Foreign Relations, chairs the Japan-U.S. Friendship Commission. Sheila, where are we with this? I mean, you just plow ahead because there's just a few weeks before the games and then just have nobody in the stands?
I think that's the answer. Thank you for having me. So I think it's important for your listeners to understand that the government is going to issue a state of emergency, but that sounds dramatic. But the caseload, let's just say in Tokyo yesterday, was 178,000 cases. Compare that to LA County, where the caseload yesterday was 1.2 million cases. So the thing to remember here is the Japanese government response may sound draconian or dramatic, but the cases are going up, but they're certainly not anywhere near us or some other parts of the world. So that's one piece. The second is the Olympics are hard to cancel. You know, from Los Angeles has been the host of the Olympics. This is a huge investment, billions of dollars. And I think the Japanese estimate is somewhere around, somewhere between $20 and $25 billion already spent. So there's a lot at stake. The public health is clearly on the tops of everybody's minds during our COVID-19 pandemic. But the Japanese government wants these games to go forward. Yes, perhaps even without spectators.
But what you say is correct about the rate of infection in Japan, very low in relative terms anyway. But so is their vaccination rate, pretty low. So what will the optics be in the event they go ahead with this and their now relatively low infection rate skyrockets, which it could, since so few of the people in the Japanese population have been vaccinated?
No, you're right. You're absolutely correct. So there's two variables that Prime Minister Suga had his eye on. One was the vaccination rate, which he said would be 1 million doses a day. And so everybody in Japan would be vaccinated by the middle of October. And the second is, of course, whether or not they could contain the spread of the virus during the Olympics. Harder, I think, to control. The vaccination rate was expected to be much higher by now. Japan got in the vaccination game late because it insisted on regulating and testing vaccinations, right, on Japanese people, didn't take the, you know, the clinical trials over here at face value. So they were late to get in on the supply game. And to date, they've got about 20% of their population vaccinated. So that's far behind us, far behind the Europeans. It's much better than a lot of places in the world. But if you were thinking about hosting these games, it's not where I think the prime minister would like to see his country be.
So there's the government and there's the pushback just from people, right? Because there's this whole contingent of people there, the population, that haven't wanted this to go forward for a long time now.
No, you're right. And I think public opinion polling coming into this year, I think the late May polls were the most dramatic. About 83% of the Japanese people said they didn't want the games this summer. So they either wanted them postponed to later in the year or maybe another year, or they didn't want them to happen at all. Right now, that's softened a little bit. I think the public has kind of accepted the reality that they're going to happen, but that doesn't mean they're happy about it. And you may or may not know, but there's an election coming up in Japan, a pretty critical election in October. So the prime minister has a lot riding on this politically.
So it really does sound like you mentioned at the very beginning how difficult it is to cancel Olympics, and it's difficult, let's face it, because of money. Is that what's driving this totally? Is it money? Because it doesn't sound, as you just said, it's not like there's this groundswell of support from the Japanese population. They seem to actually would be more than happy if it just went away. So is it just an economic decision, period?
So I think it's bigger than that. I mean, I think the lead up to the 2020 Olympics, which was last year, which is when it was supposed to happen, was really couched in terms of Japan's, you know, technological innovation, Japan coming back on the world scene. This was, you know, an echo of the 1964 Tokyo Olympics when Japan rolled out the bullet train and recovery from World War II. So this was largely, there was a lot of identity politics, if you'll forgive me for using that phrase. You know, Japan was back. Japan was energized. Japan was looking forward and innovating. And so there was that piece of the puzzle as well. But of course, we all ran into this COVID-19 pandemic, which derailed last summer's timing. And the postponement was to say, okay, we'll do it when the pandemic's over, but we're still not over. We're still in the middle of it. So it's one of those damned if you do and damned if you don't, if you'll forgive the expression, kinds of decisions. I think if the prime minister had pulled the plug completely, there would be massive economic loss. And the lack of opportunity to regain some of that investment, which is what everybody was thinking by postponing it a year. But now we're still in the pandemic. There's no tourists. There's no income from traveling to Japan. There's none of the bounce that was going to come for the Japanese economy and society. And even politically, none of that is going to come out of these Olympics. They'll be lucky if they manage to get through them unscathed. So I think it's one of those decisions that is too hard to make in the time it would have been good to have made it, if that makes any sense. And looking back over our shoulder, we can say, oh, they just should have canceled.
Yeah.
But last year, when they did postpone, they thought they still had the opportunity to realize the full potential of the Games.
Sheila Smith, Senior Fellow, Asia-Pacific Studies at the Council on Foreign Relations.
If you're a man and you're still unsure about getting vaccinated, this might have you making an appointment quickly. Doctors and health experts are looking into whether COVID can cause erectile dysfunction. A urologist at the Cleveland Clinic says some men have been coming in saying they got ED after a COVID infection. Another doctor says it could be a symptom of long COVID, but they stress it hasn't been proven that COVID leads to ED. They say observational studies need to be done.
This is an Odyssey original. Find us on the Odyssey app, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
No matter why your clients give, a donor-advised fund from DAF Giving 360 makes charitable giving simple and efficient. They can get a tax deduction upon funding an account, and their assets can potentially grow tax-free as they recommend when and where to give. DAF Giving 360 has over 25 years of expertise bringing donors, financial advisors, and charities together to make a greater impact. Learn more at dafgiving360.org/advisors.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Bitcoin might sound complicated, but the Gemini credit card makes it so simple. Use it like any credit card. Buy lunch, gas, or your weekly groceries, and you'll earn up to 4% back instantly in Bitcoin or one of over 50 other cryptos straight to your account. No annual fee. And right now, you can grab a $200 Bitcoin intro bonus. It's the easiest way to start building your Bitcoin stash. Go to Gemini.com/card to learn more. Terms apply. Issued by WebBank, in order to qualify for the $200 crypto intro bonus, you must be approved by June 30th, 2025 and spend $3,000 in your first 90 days. Terms apply. Some exclusions apply to instant rewards in which rewards are deposited when the transaction posts. This content is not investment advice and trading crypto involves risk. For more details on rates, fees, and other Gemini credit card terms, see rates and fees.
Game day or any day, your fit says it all. Hit up MLBShop.com for the latest jerseys, caps, hoodies, and accessories to keep you in the game all year long. Rep your team. Rep your city. Rep yourself. Gear up and game on at MLBShop.com, the official online shop of Major League Baseball. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.